Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time it is, wherever you are in our amazing earth. Welcome to the 100th episode of the CDO Matters podcast. 100. And we are celebrating our
100.
We're celebrating. saying something to me horrible inside. There's something about stop. Please stop. We're celebrating our 100th episode by bringing some of our returning champions back, right? These are the returning champions of the CDO Matters podcast. Scott Taylor, the Data Whisperer, thank you for joining, my friend. Scott was with us. You were number one. You were episode number one, and you were episode number 50, and now you're on 100. Just saying.
And just a little bit of trivia, I was also episode zero.
Oh, that's true. So, fun fact, thank you for reminding my friend. So we were at
my souvenir from that day.
Oh, that's right. We were at an event that I don't think exists anymore. I don't know if that event exists anymore, but Scott and I were both at a conference that was being held in the TWA hotel that is this old hotel that is adjacent to JFK Airport in New York that used to be like an old terminal, right, Scott?
Like it was the TWA terminal in its day, and it was glorious.
Yeah, and if you ever get an opportunity to go there, you should. Anyway, to make a long story short, Scott, I think you were like on the end of a long tour. You were tired.
Oh, we were coming out of COVID, and we were all sick with not COVID, but other colds. And it was just, like an early sick COVID.
Yeah.
We'll get to introducing the other guests soon in the second half hour.
Yes, we will.
I'll come back later.
Hold on. This is a good story.
101. You're invited to the 101st.
This is a good story. So I'm all fired up. I'm going to do a podcast, right? And I'm like, hey, podcast. I went and bought like expensive DSLR and all the sound equipment and just like lav mics and everything. And I found this conference room that was separate away from the conference, and it was nice and quiet. And I set up everything and lighting and my expensive camera. And I've got Scott Taylor, the Data Whisperer, with 8 billion followers on LinkedIn. And I was like, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And Scott was like, I don't feel well, right? But I'll do it for you. I'll do it for you, Malcolm. Yeah, exactly right. And we go through, we have an amazing, about 50, 55 minute podcast. And I didn't hit record. I didn't hit record. And I'm like, oh my God, we get to the end. There's nothing there.
You learned your lesson quickly, didn't you?
Yeah. So that was episode zero. Yeah.
And lost in the ether somewhere.
I'm going to just hold it out. Yeah. Did I say this already? That's all we kept thinking the whole time. Did we say this already, or did we not say this yet again?
So that was episode zero. So yes.
I learned a very important lesson that day. You know what that lesson is?
Never do somebody's first podcast.
Never do what?
Somebody's first podcast.
Okay.
That's true.
Yeah. So thank you for joining on this, your fourth, technically your fourth, CDO Matters podcast, Scott. Wow. Of course, we are also joined by my friend Samir Sharma, joining from London today. Samir, how are you? Hello.
I'm very good, thank you. All the better for seeing the three of you, specifically Juan with his honest t-shirt, and my man in Florida or Miami or wherever you are in his. Are you in a turtleneck?
Oh, hey, Scott,
you're talking to me.
Scott,
I'm in a mock turtleneck.
Are you in a mock turtleneck? I was thinking, is it?
Mock turtleneck. It's the latest thing. I'm actually in Black Rock, Connecticut, at a Data Whisperer.
Oh, you're Connecticut. Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. You're
back home.
Because you flip between the two, don't you?
We're snowbirds. So we we go to Florida. We also go to Antigua, which is
lovely. Yes.
But it's April, so we're back.
Samir is celebrating his recent run off Broadway. It's off Broadway. It's not Broadway. So that means it's off Broadway.
Being honest, it's true. But
yes. And yes. His appearance as Colonel Mustard in the recent production of Clue. Off Broadway. Absolutely. So, have you seen any of the trades, Samir? Have you seen any of the reviews of your show? Two thumbs up.
Absolutely unbelievable. Very good reviews. Everybody's come out singing, dancing. Although it wasn't a musical, and they have, you know, rave reviews. They want us back, and we're going to see if we are going to put some more shows on.
Absolutely brilliant.
And of course, it was a compelling condiment, which I thought was a compliment.
Compelling condiment.
Compelling condiment.
I laughed. I cried. It was the stand-up and feel-good rendition of Clue. And, of course, joining us from the greatest city in the world, the ATX, keeping it weird in Austin, Texas, is my friend Juan Cicada. Hi, Juan. Welcome.
Hello. Hook'em. Hook'em. Yes. How are you doing, Malcolm? It is a pleasure to be here in 100 episodes.
Yeah, I can't believe it. You are a Longhorn, right? You went to UT for your PhD, did you not?
I did my undergrad and my PhD. My wife did her master's and her PhD here. So we're a full Longhorn household.
So you're still working your way through your student loans is what you're saying.
Luckily, no.
Excellent.
Can you provide me with some understanding of Longhorn?
Oh, that's the mascot for the University of Texas at Austin.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
Longhorn. They're like technically a breed of Spanish cow that can survive in the insane Texas heat. So that's why they're a Texas icon. They imported these Spanish cows that can deal with the heat, but they're not very good for meat and they're not very good for milk. Oh. They look great on t-shirts.
What was the point of that then?
Have great longhorn.
It's just a mascot.
Okay, all right. Mascots are in this year, aren't they? Apparently, in America.
I missed it. Are they? I don't know. They're always in.
I don't know. I guess so.
Hey, in terms of judging mascots, I'm not so sure you're in the right position there. Like, what the hell's a Hotspur? What's a Hotspur?
Oh, stop it. No, stop it.
You went there.
Let's not talk about that. No, I was talking about mascots because I said they're in America. Because on my feeds, on every single feed, what social media feed, I get all of this stuff about, you know, mascots and how they go around with big bags of popcorn and, you know, throwing them on everybody.
It's God's face. I don't know what the heck you're talking about.
I don't know either, but I get
when, what when are we thinking? Getting to the part of the show about data?
Are we actually live?
Are we really live?
We are live, yes. Live. We've been recording.
Live for the last 5 hours.
Oh, okay.
Well,
oh,
no, this is recorded. I mean, and if we need to edit this bit about mascots, I don't know why we would, though. I don't know where these popcorn throwing mascots are in the U.S., but weird songs
all over the country apparently.
Okay,
I've got the other prophecy mascot here.
Should you be showing that?
That's okay. They're reasonably adjacent. I mean, they don't do MDM, but they're definitely in our space, which can create some
the Men in Black.
I got my prophecy swag glasses.
This is your fake prop. Oh, those are the real prophecies.
Oh, my goodness. How come we don't get any of those? Okay. Do we get some of those?
I see dead records.
So let's talk about data. If you're just tuning in, this is what you see. Yeah, exactly. What you see is what you get. I don't know where the road is going to take us today, but all these guys have been on the podcast at least twice. All of you have been on at least twice, in the case of Scott, three times, I think. I think I've had you on one twice. I'm quite certain that I have. Anyway, you're one of the greatest parts of my job. And I mean this in all sincerity. One of the greatest parts of my job is I get to meet really, really amazing people. And the three of you are up there. And always, and Scott, you have been for years and years. Juan and Samir, consider you dear friends. And I'm honored that you're here, and I'm honored that I get to learn from you. And I do every time I talk to you. So that's why we're here today. That's why you're joining me on the 100th. I couldn't think of three better people to do it. Let's talk about data. So Samir, you're on your way to Gartner, which is very exciting.
I am. First time.
I know. It's a newbie. So Juan, what advice do you have to give to a first time Gartner attendee? I mean, you're a cagey old vet.
I'm green.
Yeah. What do you say to Samir?
Okay. Well, knowing that this is being recorded, so I have to be careful what I say. So I think there's two things. There is what you extract, what you hear in the hallway, talking to as much people. And then you see what's being presented. And there's two types of presentation, right? There's a pure Gartner presentation. And then there's customer presentations, which are usually connected because there's some vendors around that, right? So I think you can triangulate between what you're hearing in the hallway, what Gartner is saying, and then what the customers connected a little bit to the vendors are. And then you kind of just see those patterns, see what emerges, see what aligns. What's most interesting is the contradictions. It's like, right. People are saying this, and then, but these other people are saying this. And then this is when you realize, we don't even know what we're talking about.
Well, Samir, you had made a comment on LinkedIn, and I actually responded to it. And where you made a comment where you're like, you're excited to go see, you know, what's really happening.
In
the world really of data and analytics, what's really happening. Yeah. And my kind of comment, you know, wary of the Gartner police, my comment was, there's a lot of capability washing.
Look, I've got to say, at every single conference that we all probably attend, you have to wade through that noise, don't you? Yeah. You have to always filter that out and understand and try and get the real narrative of what's going on. And I think Juan mentioned it in the response to my post is, it's a little bit like, you know, when deals are done at the UN, they're not done in the chambers. They're not done in those big conferences. They're done in the hallways. Right. That's where the real stuff gets done. And so I'm assuming that this is very similar and that's Juan's point about it. But look, you know, you've got to take it with a pinch of salt in terms of I'm there to sort of meet a lot of people. And of course, it's my first time. So everybody talks about this one. They do. You know, Scott was at the last one in was it Florida, Orlando?
Orlando, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, loads of people were posting about it. I never get FOMO, but for this, I think it's going to be interesting just for me to get that firsthand perspective without really, you know, without muddying the waters and reading a lot of stuff. So yes, I will be there. I will be reporting on stuff as well. So you will see posts from me about my take on it and what is actually happening on the ground. So there will be I will cut through some of that as well, hopefully.
Hashtag sponsored. Scott.
Hashtag sponsored, yes.
Good for you,
man. Hashtag sponsored. What's your advice, Scott? What do you say to the Gartner newbie?
If you see any good swag, make sure to get on the first day because they run out. And
oh, really? Okay.
And when you see somebody you want to take a selfie with, get that early too, because you don't know when you're going to run back into them. These are practical advice to get that content going. Watch the keynotes because those are like the funnest, biggest, broadest. Yes. They narrowed it down this year to one major metaphor, which I think was an improvement. Because they usually swim, they mix all kinds of in the keynote discussion or in the keynote presentation.
Well, the metaphor was the raft, the white water rafting, and I thought it was kind of effective. Except and Juan, you actually agreed to this when I posted this, and it to me the biggest concern, and I fully expect that the keynote in London will be the same as it was in Orlando. They typically are, by the way.
Yeah, if not the same people, even, right?
No, you're different people, but the message I suspect the message will be the same. And so the whitewater raft metaphor was, hey, we're in this raft, and some people love it, and some people are throwing up in the back,
And it's okay if you're one of the people throwing up in the back, right? And the metaphor was, we're all on this raft and it's crazy and it's disruptive and it's hectic. And of course the raft is AI. And we're on the raft and we're going down the river and it's all going to be okay. And you may be the guy at the front who is happy, or you may be in the guy at the back who's throwing up, and it's okay to be either. But they actually kind of even went a little bit further and said that you have a few years to get over your fear, to get over being the person in the back who is the AI doomerist, or the AI, I don't want to do this, or the late adopter, that you've got time. They said clearly to me that you've got time to figure this out. I don't think we have time. Juan, do you think we have time?
No. This stuff is moving so fast and everything is changing. And I mean, look at stock prices and every layoffs and stuff. And like there is no time. And I to go back to, they were talking about ROI, the return on, but the word I was not for investment. It was for.
They had that riff too. Return on information, return on insight, They played with that too. They added that.
And I was like, well, where's, at the end of the day, it's all about money, man. I mean.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So we're in business.
Well, so the funny thing is, how did they connect that to money though? How did they, was it just giving people insight without, what was the intention on that?
This was the eye.
Yes.
What was the eye one? You recall what the eye was?
What was intelligence? What was, I don't remember. I honestly don't remember.
I
remember so clearly how they said, and I've been bringing this up, but is 50% of the people are doing AI, but they're doing AI because they're being told to do AI by the board. So they have
50%,
right? Mm-hmm. 14% said that they felt great on governance and how things are going. But then you said 45% have already done semantic layers this year, and the other 40 and another 45% will do it next year. I'm like,
no, they haven't.
They have done something, right? So for me, if an interpretation, and this is the one I take, is, oh, you have to do AI. Perfect. I'll do AI. I'm going to do this chat with the data because that's AI. I need to have this semantic layer. I'm going to go just build a semantic layer. And I got chat with your data. It's not governed. And that was a quick thing to go do something. And I'm saying I'm doing AI to keep the board happy because I have a chat with my data. Like that's, everybody's doing that. So that fits that mold. Now, is that really transformational? Is that really providing business? No, that's just like, I'm just slapping something over there.
Keeping up with the Joneses, really.
They say 50% of the AI budgets are wasted. They just don't know which half.
Boom, boom. It's the Barnum and Bailey, right? Isn't that a metaphor?
That's the old average. I know half my advertising budget's wasted.
Oh, right. That was a Deutsch. Wasn't that a Deutsch?
Wrigley.
Yeah, something. I don't know.
Wanamaker. It's credited to all kinds of people who start with W. They did say it's the year to double down on foundations. And I'm like looking around like, when wasn't it? Like,
well, exactly. They were saying that 4 years ago.
4 years ago? It's every year for the last 20 years or whatever, right?
This idea that, you know, data management is back is like, well, where we were never gone.
Well, no. And then it's context, which is like, I'm very lucky that I have been able to kind of be in certain kind of circles and now be able to talk to amazing people. And the last 9 months since the move to ServiceNow, I have been able to kind of expand my circle and get into new circles. And I'm like, oh, right. I've lived just in my data bubble and I've kind of been in this. And what I realized is that we have lived in this world, which is like, data is the new oil. We have data driven. We have to democratize data, data literacy. So like data is the center of the world and everything we do is data. And now I realize like, I mean, data obviously super important. Context is king. Obviously context is important, but that's not the center of the world. You know, why do we do data? Why do we do context? Why do we do governance? Why do we analytics? Why do we do insights? It's to get work done. I need to increase revenue. That means that for the sales team, they need to be able to have all the context for the customers that they're going to talk to today. So give them that type of stuff.
I want to reduce risk. Yeah. There is some IT issues that are on the board for the last 3 weeks or whatever. Like that should be dealt with as faster. Like that's how we get work done. So I think what we need to be, the shift is, I've been talking about this, is like, what did pre-Copernicus, Earth was the center of the world. We live in this, data is at the center of the world, and we're not saying that data isn't important.
But how many of us have been talking about that? How many have been saying that?
Like, and I bring this up all the time, is like, we're saying something that's obvious. Yeah, we have to say it over and over again.
No, but the thing is, we've also been saying this the thing about, you know, that's why I commented on your post yesterday with that big yippee, because it was like, oh, finally, you know, what I've been and others have been saying for the last 10, 15 years, what is it at the end of the day? It's, you know, context, you know, literacy, blah, blah, blah. I remember us having this conversation about 4 or 5 years ago. And you and I were talking about graphs and this and that, and you kindly gave me your book, which
I gave it to you on purpose, knowing that you would never read it.
I was honest. But the thing
was it your book, Juan?
Yes,
his yearbook. It was his yearbook from university.
this is dissertation.
Do I have that book in here?
This is dissertation, and you just ignored it, Samir. Come on.
I have Samir's book. I don't have Malcolm's book, but I don't have your book.
Oh my gosh.
Need you.
Well, you're going to get it now. Believe me, there it is.
There it is. You got to get it now.
There it is.
Well, look, back to Juan's point. Juan, it's always been that way, but we've been living in this bubble that many people have created because they believe that the only thing that exists is data, and so, it will always be that way. But and that is just the wrong way of looking at things.
This is what I'm saying
for a business.
Just to say, I think. Data is important. Content is important. Governance is important. All that stuff is important. Of course, these are what we need to do. What is the work should be at the center. And by the way, AI is a way of getting that work done. Like these are we just need to put work at the center, and data enables the work. All this stuff. And I think we just
Said it. I remember doing a post maybe 5-6 years ago and I've done subsequent posts, and I said data and data is an enabler. Oh my God, how many people. You know, how can you say that? It's, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's the, as you said, the new, it's just an enabler. It gets us to do something. It helps us. It's an input. Remember the old framework at, you know, university input, kind of, you know, feedback loop or whatever, an output, and something happens and you get something else. You know, that's all it is, right? And that exhaust that you get something out of goes on to something else because it's an input for something else. So this is just something that's, you know, that's all data is. It's just giving us a way to move along the chain. But our final point, our final exit is actually that result, that outcome. And that's where we want to get to.
So, yes, all the above. And frankly, one of the reasons why I'm not a Gartner analyst anymore is the very things that you guys just said, which is that I was talking to CIOs and CDOs all day, every day, and I was saying the things, right? Like focus on customers, focus on business process, focus on process excellence, focus on ROI, focus on everything that is in the data. Stop talking about data first because you're inverting the value prop, right? All of the above. And it never happened. Right. It never happened. I was like the consultant that was consulting and nobody was implementing my ideas. And I was like, OK, well, I got to find a different way to tell my story. Just led to the podcast. So, Scott, how do we get out of this? How do we get out of it?
This has been, you know, I go back to pre-2K in this space and it's the same stuff. You know, people talking about how they're a data company. You know, I worked for Nielsen. That's a data company. Okay. A manufacturer that uses data to be data driven with their new semantic ontology layer for extra context. They're not a data company, but as you both said, it's the enabler. It gets things done. It's the fuel for the engine. It's the water for the pipes. It's whatever analogy you want to do. But we got to talk about it in a way that business understands it. And we continue to do this. I saw somebody talking about how they posted a job for a chief agent officer.
Oh, I saw that too.
It's like, what?
And I posted on that. I did a post on that.
Maybe that's where I saw it.
That's what,
And this whole idea of a CDAIO.
It's getting too much.
Why? It's just like we keep adding more levels. We keep thinking that each little individual capability is actually a C-level job. And if you think the rest of the business enjoys this, you're crazy. And if you go through enough of these cycles of here's the latest, greatest thing, here's the crushing disappointment that it didn't bring value, but here's the next latest, greatest thing that's going to help us. And if you hear that enough, if you're a business person, you start to wonder if this, you know, that voice that's coming at you about what the latest, greatest thing is, has got any credibility. And, you know, you guys know that I think the way we talk about data is holding the industry back. And we just continue it. I don't know how you break the loop. I know it keeps me in business, this craziness. But it's still this fascination with the coolest thing and, you know, saying you're not going to talk about technology, but then doing a demo. It's like, you know, there's...
I think it's fundamentally a leadership issue. I think it's fundamentally a leadership... Juan, you're going to say something, though.
No, quick parentheses. And this is just... I need to rant for a second here.
Yes, please, go.
It is so freaking tired when you make a I'm making a post about something, which is clearly saying that the problem is about people and process, and then somebody comes in and promotes their own technology and saying, I got the solution.
Yeah. Oh, please, how many times?
In parentheses, that was it.
Yeah.
Hey, this whole people thing too. I have a problem even with that. Oh, it's about the people. No kidding. It's about the people. Like what else mean? Is it going to be about? Business is about people. People are about people. It's like those books, you know, 1001 movies you should see before you die. It's like, when else am I going to see them? It's like so obvious. That, no, of course it's about you. So.
Yeah. This is 1001 movie you should see.
Have you started? Have you almost finished the book then?
All right, next topic. I don't know how we get. I don't know how we get out of the. Well, I do know how we get out of the trap. But I think it's about leadership. I think it's about mindset. I'm not trying to peddle my book, but I'm indirectly peddling my book. That's what I wrote a book about it. About changing your mindset, focusing on customers, focusing on making your customers' lives. Thank you, Scott. Making your customers' lives better. And if you start thinking that data is the center of the universe, which most people in our world, frankly, I think do, right? That's the problem. You're inverting the value prop. What you said, Juan, is the business process, the business outputs. What the business does is first, we need to embrace the idea that we exist to serve. Right. And I think if we can embrace that, like we exist to serve others, right? We don't exist to care for the data. We don't exist to govern the data. We don't exist to control the business processes and stop salespeople from doing dumb things in a CRM. We exist to serve. And I think if we start with that, maybe that's a good starting point.
So following on this and actually I'm connected, we had Kyle Winterbottom on our podcast recently, and we're discussing about this. And his point is like, yes, we agreed that, but the issue here is that at the board level, they're actually hiring the wrong people to go do this. So yes, we need that.
But you've got to look at where are they getting their advice from?
His perspective being ahead of
it. Where are they getting their advice from, Juan? Come on. No, where are they getting their advice from? That is coming from an external consultancy who wants to put somebody in there who is going to then provide them with a tail end of business. This is the problem that we have. Boards, that's why I am working with boards in order to counter that problem. You know, that's one of the ways that you can do that.
More Samirs in the world.
Well, it's not just me. I mean, you know.
And don't forget his book, The Strategy.
Thank you very much.
I have a very technical book, so you're not really going to bring it up here.
But still.
I'll put you know, mine up instead. Pretend this is one.
Yeah. But that's the biggest thing we have on our on our shoulders. It is the external advisory that is providing the wrong avenue, and I've seen it. I've seen the JDs that have been done, and I'm thinking, hang on, that doesn't make sense. Where did that come from? When I ask, it came from the usual suspects, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they came from the cat sultan at Meow Kinsey. It came from the cat sultan, Meow Kinsey. That's where the job description came from. You know, the cynic in me
is chief dog officer.
Yes,
my newest character, by the way, coming Lam Altman. It's gonna be great.
Sam Altman. Just give me $7 trillion.
I love it.
Thank
I
you.
I love it.
Yes, you can trust me.
Yes. And this guy, AI, this is, I was interviewing swag animals with this little.
I've got a storyline for you. For Lam Altman, you could write a storyline there about him thinking that he's going to solve the world's problems. And meanwhile, his entire team is trying to find ways to get him off the board.
I was thinking Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, nice. Get one of those. Who's got a data hero official? There we go.
I have a, bobbleheads.
I haven't got one of those. Pat and I are left out again. That's not great, is it?
You need to join us on our Data Hero Summit. It's our virtual event in October. We'll get you a bobblehead. Yeah. All the speakers get bobblehead.
Oh, there you go.
Bobblehead.
Yeah. That was the only gift that we could give to people who work for large companies who have like caps on the amount of stuff.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
By the way, I did not check that box. I'll take whatever cash you want to give me. No problem.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, we'll have our people talk to your people. So what were we talking about? Leadership and getting over the hump.
Talking about the job descriptions.
We were talking about, I wrote a chapter about this, about these feedback loops in our industry. And the cynic in me, you know, as long as there's a vested interest in the big name consultancies to maintain the status quo, I would argue the status quo would be maintained. Right. And and it's this circling, you know, circular door of CDOs who last 18 months. They'll go to the next company. They'll be interviewed and say, what happened? Well, there's no data culture. They didn't embrace data governance. They didn't give me the funding that I want. They didn't give me the support that I want. So, you know, what am I going to do? I'm trying to climb up the hill, but they're rolling boulders down on top of me as I'm climbing the hill. So I had to leave. Oh, great. You're hired. Right. And over
18 months of the same.
Bingo. The exact same thing, wash, rinse, and repeat. And you can make a lot of money as a CDO doing that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Make a lot of money. So, I don't know. I'm still an optimist. I still see the power of data. You know, I don't want AI to be the next Hadoop. I don't want it to be that. I don't want it to be the next digital transformation. And there's reason to be optimistic, I think. Juan, are you an optimist?
Of course. I'm a rational optimist. So if you read the book, Rational Optimist by Matt Wright.
Confessions of a Rational Optimist.
Check out his book. Books by Matt Wright.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Look, at the end of the day, the rational optimist for me is like you take all the pluses and all the minuses, you'll have more you end up in the positive. So there's a lot of negative things happening in the world and stuff, but there's more positive. So that's how we net out. So I think that what AI is doing right now is we're seeing this before, right? Oh, it's the web, while the web changed, it's electricity and all these types of things, right? Mm-hmm. It is. So that's very true. The thing that's different from everything else is that it is at a speed that is completely unprecedented, right? So that's something that many people that I talk to, they're like, but we've seen this way before. They're not saying it's so fast. Then people are like, there's other people are saying, hey, it's this speed that is very different. So what's happening right now is this gap that this is the concern that I have. And this is where the negative is coming out. But I think there's going to be more positive at the end. I am telling people right now, especially like junior folks coming out, I'm very worried for them. And I tell people, junior folks, I'm sorry, life's going to suck for you for a while. It's going to be really bad. But there's three things
I'm going to give them that book, 1001 Movies, then.
So there's three things that I want people to go do. Number one, this is the moment that you need to start really think about systems thinking. And this is all about going back to what you're saying, Samir, is like, understand what are your inputs and what are your outputs? How to break this problem down to smaller pieces. Like, this is systems thinking. This is problem solving, right? I think, and it's not just about how to go put a prompt and let the LLM bytecode the whole thing. Architect these things and do this, right? So the systems thinking is number one. Second, those things that we call soft skills, I mean, those are really the strong skills. And like, this is where the people and the communication, like that's what's going to differentiate you. Because at the end of the day, people are still want to talk to other people and be able to communicate what you're trying to go do and what is this a problem and so forth. So communication is key, not written and orally. This is really important. And this is where I'm like, if you're an introvert, you got to figure out how to become that introvert extrovert a little bit around that thought. And the third is, I think people need to start figuring out
what baskets to put their eggs in. And we need to start figuring out a particular expertise in a domain and an industry, because I think we've been very generalist to technology. This thing, technology applies. Oh, we have the technology that does X, and we focus on, again, back to the technology. I'm like, but what is the problem that you're solving? And I think what's important right now is to really understand a particular industry and figure out who are the players in that industry. What is the current status quo? Like, what is, like, how is this dominated? How is this market changed? Like, be able to understand that language. And I think that's what's going to differentiate you. And you bring that up to the strong skills, and then you figure out how to go solve your problems for that. So I think that's the advice I'm giving junior folks, and not just for junior, anybody. And that's what makes me optimist, is like, that's going to be the changes that we're going to go see, and things are going to change. And I think these are three pieces of advice I'm giving people to say how you can take advantage of this moment.
Do you think the education system is up to snuff for that? Do you think that the education system, I'm just looking for,
so I think it's not right now. And there needs to be a lot of change in education. Some stuff that I'm starting to go see, which makes me optimistic. One is, for example, this was just announced last week, the like Khan Academy is connecting with TED. And so this is a TED Khan Academy where you're actually going to be able to kind of have a continuous education at a much lower price. And it's not accredited at this moment, but it's just giving opportunity to people to kind of upskill themselves very quickly. We need to have a change of education too, where it's a continuous, a truly continuous education, which is not like, oh, you go to high school and then you go to 4 years of college and then you go off to work. No, you're like every 5 years you go back. It's natural to go back to school to upskill yourself for the next thing you want to go do. So there's things that I'm starting to go see around that gives me optimism. It should happen faster, but it's better than it's not happening at all. So this is the rational optimist to me.
Yeah, well, over your point number two, obviously with the soft skills,
here's my call out, please. Let's stop calling it soft skills.
Strong skills.
Nice, but, whatever, you know, there's a certain vernacular that exists today in people's minds. And so hard skill, soft skill, we didn't come up with it, but people get that quickly. And sometimes if you want to change too much terminology to then make your point, you kind of lose folks.
Let's put the labels away. People have been thinking about more like, I need to be great at using a tool. And then then the human aspect, oh, that's that fluffy thing. And it's more important. Like, this is like the issue with like people, not an issue, but like when we talk about STEM, oh, we elevate STEM so high, but then there's like, oh, the arts is sometimes you realize. Yeah,
right. And they came up with STEM, like, right?
Exactly. That's why they did that.
The arts is what gives us back our humanity, which is what we actually need right now for AI, that which seems to be taking it away. And this is a pendulum swinging, that we just push the pendulum so much on one side for technology that history shows us pendulum will swing back, and this is us regaining our humanity, and this is the strong skills. This is the, hey, Shamir, I love what you're doing. You're going off and acting like this. Like these are examples of what we need to show people. It's like, life is not just one side, right? There's a whole balance of stuff, and this is how we regain our humanity. All of this is, for me, how I feel. I'm a rational optimist.
You know, I don't know if it's all doom and gloom for the young people. And I know you're not saying it's all doom and gloom. You're saying it's going to suck for a while. But I don't know, like, if my old employer is right and 80 to 90% of all data is unstructured, and I don't want to get into this academic asinine argument about, you know, whether it's semi-structured, structured, JSON, XML, whatever. In tables are not a table. If that's true, and I saw a stat recently that said that only 25% of data being used by AI models is actually governed in any way, shape, or form. Basically, our total addressable market as data people is mostly untapped, right? Is fallow ground, right? All of the stuff sitting in SharePoint servers, all of the PDFs dangling on hard drives out there.
One would think it's easier to get that now.
But Juan, to your point about the pendulum, every time that swung too hard, this kind of reminds me of the offshoring craze, like 10, 15 years ago, when we offshored everything and then everything went to hell in a handbasket, and then it pivoted back, right? And I think that we'll inevitably pivot back. And I think the people who have the systems thinking, right, like who understand the business processes, but could also deeply integrate data and understand how data works. So I do think that there's still a generalist layer there. I do. What you're describing, Juan, is a T-shape.
Yeah, 100%. It's a T-shape.
T-shape.
And my point has been for a long time.
It has to go a little bit deeper right now in this moment. Yeah. You have to get a little bit deeper into that stuff. And then if you're already deep, you start becoming a pie shape, right? You get two down.
Yeah. But I mean, right now, data people are eye shaped. They don't have the top on the T, Scott. There's no T, like, you know. There's the eye. Scott's got the eye.
The all seeing one.
Yeah, I'm a little more optimistic in the short term. You know, I think that this will induce more and more demand. I think the Jevons paradox will play out. The more that we produce, the more demand there will be for our services. If we can just figure it all out. Yeah. I don't know, Samir, what do you think?
I think there is there's a notion of short-termism, because right now most organizations are attempting to do efficiency on efficiency on efficiency on efficiency on efficiency, right? Because that's where we are. That can't be maintained for that long. No one can sustain that. Yep. So what's going to happen?
Nobody ever shrank the greatness. So
exactly. So much efficiency. And apart from the, you know, what was it called? The shrinking guy? Not Ant-Man, but there was a, you know, before that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
The Incredible Shrinking Man, I think it was called. Anyway, the idea of organizations continuing to play the efficiency game is not going to work. They are going to be in a hole because there won't be enough people to actually then create that upward trend in terms of that revenue. They won't be able to get their products and services out quick enough. And I think they are, you know, it's like the lemmings when when they go off the side of the cliff. Everybody's using the set. They're just following the lemming in front of them. We must be efficient. Every digital transformation has been, let's talk about efficiencies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we're talking about AI transformation, efficiencies. How much more can we take of that? And I don't think these are really.
So what you're saying though assumes the status quo on legacy processes, right? And if we can agree that in the data world we are hindered by this devotion to the status quo, right? I'm sure the same thing is true in procurement and manufacturing and HR and all these other processes that are running on like TQM Deming stuff from 40 years
ago. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if we could, to Juan's first point, if we could re-engineer those processes,
is it about re-engineering, or is it actually about blowing up what's happening right now and starting from scratch? Because if you think about it,
I think it's the latter.
You're layering on AI onto what you said is a legacy business that's been running in the same way for the last 50, 60,
70, faster steam engine. Faster steam engine. Exactly. Yeah.
Who can blow it up, though? That's such a risky proposition for some of these big enterprises, right? Saying, we're just going to blow everything up.
I get that bit. But yeah. You said somebody's, at some point, you know, who was it? Was it Allbirds? Is it Allbirds?
The shoe company? Allbirds. Oh, good grief.
They went from being a shoe company to now being an AI company.
Yeah.
And selling compute and data centers and stuff like that. You know, that's, liquidated crazy.
A few
but their stock price went booming. But look, that was a pivot, and I don't know where that's going to end up.
And that just felt like a total stunt.
Of course it was. Of course it was.
And they got rich.
But I think what's going to happen, well, predictions are always, or I don't want to predict this, but looking at the history of what happens is whenever a new innovation comes in, right, we're trying to accommodate that innovation to the way how we do things today. And then you're trying to go make efficient, going back more efficient. And then you're like, well, this isn't as efficient. And people are like, oh, this wasn't really as good as it was. But then people realize, wait, maybe the way we're doing things before needs to completely change. So we're bringing electricity in. Well, that means that we have to redo our factories from scratch, not just bolt electricity.
But it's the business model then, isn't it?
I think it's rethinking how your business processes and how you do this, right?
But that's fundamentally your business model, the way it works, right? So I think the process is a part of it.
In a short term, we're like figuring out these efficiencies. But I think this is where like the larger quote unquote legacy companies have to start thinking about, how am I going to reinvent myself or reinvent our businesses around this, and saying, okay, but this is not a big bang. You don't do it for everything. You have to be very kind of strategic, but we're going to go start. Here's how we go do this today. Here is how we could go change this with the current technology that we have. And then we start learning from that. And at that, and then we're entering new territory. And then those are where new roles are going to come in and how to reshuffle people into this new stuff. Newer native companies won't have to deal with their quote unquote legacy stuff. And that is their opportunity to grow. And that is the risk. And I think this is why right now you need to have businesses need to reinvent themselves. There's going to be AI all over the place. That's why we need to be able to, on one side, control the AIs, but at the same time, we need to be able to enable them, enable this whole reinvention. That's whoever's going to do that shift faster are be the winners.
But if we think about where we currently are, we're talking about a lot of agent, you know, being spun up by companies who are, you know, I was speaking to somebody last week. We spun up 30 agents, and those agents are going to be doing, you know, not only marketing but some of the customer service stuff and so on. You know, the chatbots or whatever, right? But that becomes a new level of what's the word I'm looking for? My mind's gone completely blank. A new level of organizational principles, right? Yeah. Where we are going to have agents going off and doing stuff that we may not know what they're doing. We may not know what the result is. We may not know the decisions that have been made. We may not know why they went to do that in the first place, because they just decided, oh, I'll go off and get that because I couldn't get that API before, or nobody told me about that, but maybe I should just make it up and do, you know. So there's got to be a level of organizational principles behind governing these things.
We do this already for humans.
I get it. But the thing is, people are being unwieldy about it now. It's just like, well, let them loose, you know. And maybe this is the experimentation phase, phase where people are saying, let's see how it works. But the problem is, Juan, the minute your, you know, PII data is leaked by an agent,
But this is when everybody like, something bad's going to happen in my PII. But guess what? I think there's an 80-20 rule around this where probably the 80 part is where you can actually be okay for use cases that it's going to be fine. And that 20% is stuff that needs to be very highly contained and regulated. But we're going to be able to live with that 80%. I'm just saying, using 80-20 as a Pareto principle.
Right, yeah,
different,
yeah,
yeah. And it'll be changed by industry, of course. But I think that's what's going to happen. And then this is the change. And I think people who are going to, I'm going to let loose, I'm going to be more strategic, knowing that I will be okay letting loose in these types of areas, which is a little possible. Because today, I don't even know what the humans are doing. I trust the humans to go do this stuff, right? It's the same thing. And there's a reason why we have policies and so forth for everything for the humans.
But we know that there is a fairly obvious anti-technology bias here. And I'm not saying that from a conspiracy theory perspective. It's just a fact, right? Self-driving cars are infinitely safer than human driving cars. And all it takes is for one accident of a self-driving car, and everybody's like, forget this, I'll never get into a self-driving car.
Hold on, let me stop that. What happened with planes? How many people died? How many plane crashes happened? And we thought we stopped? No, we kept learning and learning from that. And people died, and then things improved. And now flying is the safest means of transportation. That's my example of being a rational optimist. We're going to have more pluses than the minuses. People died. There are a lot of bad things, but we learn from it, and we learn from it so quickly. And we created policies and governance around that stuff so we can go learn.
Well, and what I'm seeing is that some, not all, and I would say not even most, but some companies are doing exactly what you said, Juan, right? Like they're letting her rip. They're buttoning down the data that needs to get buttoned down. But for everything else, let's give it a shot. Let's see what works.
And that's why I said it. That experimentation phase is probably good. But as long as what happens is we've got to learn, and I think that's what Juan was talking about, you know, if we get that feedback loop and that learning, and then how do we change our operating model? How do we change the way that, you know, we orchestrate our business? Then that's the way.
Going back to like when we talk about data as a center of the world, and you look at these architectures, like you look at the medallion architecture stuff.
Oh, yes.
It's a flow that goes from data to insights, and it stops there.
Revolutionary.
Right. So, but when I think about like work is at your center, part of the things that you want to push work, but you want the feedback loop is something that is part of like traditional data architectures. And now that is something that is going to be so critical because you need to have the feedback. This is where it's not just human.
You should see the management framework. You should see my measurement framework, Juan. I have feedback loops in there ad nauseum, and people look at it and they go, oh my God, you've got a feedback loop. Of course we have, because we need to know whether we're doing the right stuff here.
Get a reference to the feedback loop.
Actually, somebody referenced it the other day, which is really cool.
Isn't that brilliant?
Back to your point about all this short-termism, how do you balance that with the idea that almost every, you know, pundit out there, when they're talking about what to do as a, you know, 100 days as a CDO, get for the quick wins. You want the quick wins, right? Look for the quick wins.
How do you balance that with the short? Getting back to our previous comment that was not recorded, thank goodness, around the 50 over 50, the 50 day leaders over 50, right? All of these years. Easy there.
Been in that club for a while.
You'll be there one day.
Yes, exactly. Some of the things I've learned in those over 50 years is that it's never an either or. It's never all short term or all long term.
It's a bunch of things that you need to have on the plate.
Focus on the short term, the short termerism, right? Like you do need to do that. Like you do need to show some movement in the first 90 days. But at the same time, you need to be building these systems that re-architect how you operate, that challenge the status quo, that do all the things that we need to do in order to, you know, adapt to this brave new world.
Let me ask you a question. Just one question first, right? How many times have you ever heard anybody go into an organization and say, tell me about the way decisions are made in your organization?
Good question. None, right? Well, Samir, that is a one-way road to, I don't know. Decision science, the idea of like tracking.
I'm not talking about decision science. Well, of course it is, but the decision is basically where we want to get to, right? We want to get to
that insight. One of the next phase after the insight is the decision that drives some sort of action.
Exactly. Yeah. And we get a result from that. So, you know, if we can map that and we know what data needs to be there for that decision. We know where that workflow is. We understand, you know, where the handoffs are between people. We understand, you know, whether it's going to be a decision tree that's going to be kind of, you know, fix this, then we do that, blah, blah, blah. If people knew that, I think that would help a huge amount for understanding of how a business works.
Well, and not all decisions are created equally. That Pareto's going to apply, right? 20%
absolutely. I get that. Right? Yeah.
So,
but if we came from how work gets done. Exactly.
Putting work at the center. Let's understand that.
Yes.
Understand your business process. And then once you get that done, then you realize what is needed and then realize, oh, wait, this is how we can adapt it. There's a million problems in every business.
You just got to go.
But you go back to what you said earlier, Malcolm, you know, just working with customers. If you mapped out your customer journey, you know, how many times I've seen a customer journey where somebody's mapped it out and they just look at maybe two or three levels. But then what about going below that, going data, going measurements, going decision flows? And then suddenly you've got a way bigger picture of like, whoa, this is actually how I create my business, how I create my data models, how I do all that. But actually we're looking at it right up and down, you know, left to right, and saying, this is how I'm going to be able to actually make a system work. Systemic thinking. That's what it is.
Yeah. I'm a huge believer in driver maps. What you just described is what could best be described as a driver map. What's actually driving the performance of the business, right? Whether that is a metric or decision point. Jets. Yeah. I'm recording a webinar in like 3 minutes. So sadly, we could do this.
Your show. How can you leave your show?
Yeah. All right, I'll leave you all. We'll just continue. We got a 100th anniversary. We've got a wrap.
I still haven't spoken about your Captain America shield behind you, Scott.
You didn't tell the stories of how we met you. Really? I thought this show was going to be about you, Malcolm.
It's about sharing your insights with our amazing community.
He's abandoning us.
All right. Okay. Mark your calendars for the 200th. So y'all will be back for the 200th. Mark your calendars. It's about 3 years from now.
Right? Are you potentially meeting for the 100th?
Sure.
Yeah. That will be the 60 under 60s then.
Yeah, exactly. All of us.
Congratulations, Malcolm. It's like point X number of podcasts, and we get to 100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And welcome, you know, to the club, Malcolm. Keep your voice out there. You're strong, you're opinionated, but you let people talk. You get great folks on there. Really, it's a testament to your intellect and your perseverance and your creativity. And we all congratulate you heartily on that.
I couldn't have done it without amazing people like you. With that, I hope you've enjoyed this.
I have 100 swag animals. I'm going to ship them.
My God, that's a lot.
All of them here. They're coming COD to your place.
That's fantastic. And,
I hope you enjoy it.
All right. With that, we're going to sign off. Thank you for supporting 100 episodes of the CDO Matters podcast. I hope to see you on the next episode sometime very soon.
I'll see you in person. See you, Gardner.
See you, Samir. Bye for now. Thanks, Jets.
Ciao, everybody.